allegations of bad behavior at the BMV, a lawsuit over inadequate mental health treatment, plus Democrats and Libertarians hold joint town halls, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 13th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, former BMV Commissioner Peter Lacy had his job offer in Virginia pulled after the Indianapolis Star published allegations that Lacy had behaved inappropriately at work.
Lacy had been set to take over the Virginia Department of Motor Vehicles after leaving Indiana's agency last month, but the Star report detailed workplace complaints from people who worked under Lacy, who abruptly resigned his role in April, weeks before he was set to depart. The story alleges that Lacy resigned from his position in Indiana a day after he appeared to be drunk in a meeting with top BMV officials, and his reported behavior at the agency included crude sexual remarks to women and angry outbursts, which allegedly included berating employees and throwing things. Lacy was allowed to resign instead of being fired, which means his employment record is largely sealed from public view.
Does the governor need to directly address these allegations? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Drew Anderson. Republican Mike O'Brien. John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of State's Newsroom Indiana. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Drew Anderson, Lacy is out of state government. Mm-hmm. Is that the most important element here?
No, you just said it. Governor Holcomb needs to come clean about why his administration hid the fact that they knew about these allegations and said nothing. And the reason why they said nothing is because his family is a big family of donors that help his party. And it really just shows the building corruption that's brewing within this party that's had control over 18 years.
Does the governor need to address this?
I think it's being addressed at the highest levels where it should be addressed appropriately by the head of personnel. It sounds like was directly involved in this this meeting that obviously precipitated the abruptness
sudden
of the
resignation
the advancement of the resignation. This happens. I mean, this happens from time to time. It happens in corporate America. It happens in public service. How you handle it matters. We've seen other examples. Mitch had a lot of these. I think you do have to balance to some degree. Peter Lacy's name is not on a ballot, but he is in public service at a high level, and there needs to be transparency on pieces of that, which is what we're getting now. Balanced against, we do ask people to come into public service as state government employees who may have issues like this. And you've got to, at some level, you've got to balance the appetite for political, as much political damage as Drew wants to put on this, with the fact that we're dealing with a guy who's obviously got a problem that goes and needs to be taken care of. But does that mean you get to still be the head of the BMV? Of course not. Does it mean that the employees that were subject to abuse or these aggravations shouldn't have a voice in that, and that be understood and known? Yes, to put it on that we need to put on every detail of it on the front page of the paper is, well, of course, what Democrats want, and of course, there has to be a balance here.
But it adds to more that's what's been happening in the state government. Just a couple weeks ago, there's been straw donor corruption happening, where it again shows that Republicans putting money over the future of the state. There are Republicans literally committing voter fraud across the state.
Those weren't elected officials. Those weren't elected officials.
Actually,
and those weren't
the county counselor was the one.
All right, hold on. I want to ask this question because the Star story pointed out the idea of allowing someone to resign versus firing them has to do with what records are available to the public and what aren't. So if you're allowed to resign, state personnel department can tell you, well, no, that's all sealed. And this is not the first time that's happened under Governor Holcomb. We saw the number two at DCS suddenly resign instead of being fired for what we later learned because of a newspaper story or inappropriate advances to an intern, or I think it was an intern. Is that the core issue that should be addressed by the governor at this point?
That is an issue because we've all asked for those documents at some time in the past. And in fact, what you would get generally is employment date, income and when raises were received, or disciplinary proceedings. In the absence of disciplinary proceedings, you're not going to get anything. So that is, by definition, an impediment to full transparency. Now, Is that probably typical what happens in most employment situations? And again, well, I say employment because let's keep it generic, whether it's private sector, corporate, nonprofit, government. The rules of engagement probably are different in all of those, or should be. And let's face it, in this situation, the ultimate employers are the citizens and taxpayers of the state of Indiana. The people who are paying, literally paying the salary of this individual. So I think it behooves public officials to err on the side, and who's to say it's erring, but to bend over backward to be as open and as transparent as possible. Even though we know, I'm guessing if you did some, and I'm sure there is somebody's doctoral dissertation who specializes in human, HR issues and how these things are dealt with, there's a time-honored tradition of saying, well, we dodged that bullet. You know, we don't need litigation. We don't need somebody suing us. And then and then that'll lead to depositions and subpoenas. We've dodged the bullet. Now, that just passes.
But the problem, and I'm going to cut against my own interests here, but the problem with that is that it leads to, now I'm going to go be the head of the BMV in Virginia and do the same exact thing without any accountability on this part. I do have a problem with that.
I have a problem with that.
That was exactly the point I was going to ask you.
Right.
What I was going to push back, and you don't even need to ask me a question, is you said we have transparency now. We only have transparency now because the Indianapolis Star pushed for it.
Exactly.
And it's one thing to, and I do think there is a balance, and it's one thing to do the balance when you first announce he's leaving. Okay. But when there clearly was an incident, there was an abrupt acceleration, and they were asked repeated questions and totally stonewalled. And I think that is terrible.
All right. Indiana is being sued over allegations it's letting people who need mental health treatment sit in jail rather than get court-ordered services. The lawsuit was brought by the ACLU of Indiana and the Indiana Protection and Advocacy Services Commission. When a person is found to be incompetent to stand trial, the state is required to provide what are known as competency restoration services. Those are often provided at state psychiatric hospitals. A new lawsuit argues that the state's Division of Mental Health and Addiction has grossly inefficient capacity to get people the services they need. That means those defendants must sit in county jails without access to necessary treatment, sometimes for months. ACLU of Indiana Legal Director Ken Falk says the state is not only violating the law, but also doing immense harm to people's health. The lawsuit asks the court to order the state to put prisoners in need of treatment into the proper facilities. Mike O'Brien, we've talked a lot on this show. We sort of teased out the way the governor's teased out that he's going to be asking for a major investment in public health in the upcoming budget session in 2023. I forgot what year it is for a second. Can a lawsuit like this be used almost as leverage by the governor to get the General Assembly to invest in public health next session?
I think these are two separate things. This deals with criminal justice. This is a consequence of criminal justice reform and missing in a way that kept low-level offenders in county jails, right, where there are no services. So we're seeing now a two-step process. ACLU is not creating any news here. The legislature already acknowledged this. Mm-hmm. The Justice Reinvestment Advisory Council, which is made up of the Supreme Court, the Sheriff's Association, prosecutors, defenders, Mental Health America, all these interest groups, has been meeting for 6 months to prepare legislation for the next session that takes care of exactly this problem. What the legislature did last session was we talked about it on the show several months ago, they took level 6 offenders that were sitting in county jails who had mental health and other service issues and allowed them to go into DOC because that's where
the
services are. They're not in the county jail, they're in DOC. And so so criminal justice reform missed too far by keeping low-level offenders in county jails awaiting, trial or prosecution. And the legislature's trying to dial that in and say, okay, well, we missed far over here. Let's take the legislation, House Bill 1004, from this session to allow low-level offenders to get access to services. Now let's look bigger picture on how to actually address mental health issues in a comprehensive way in DOC, in state hospitals, and other places. So this is already well underway. What the ACLU is doing here is, I don't know if they're just litigating it because they know it's there and everyone said it's there or what the
it is. Mike talked about sort of the steps that a lot of people are trying to take to fix problems like these. Is the rubber going to meet the road when we see a budget next year?
I mean, I don't really have faith in this just because the Republicans are trying to build up to this moment for the next budget year because they're having this taxpayer-funded commission that they're investing in. They're trying to make this a big moment, but the last time that they did a commission was on education, and they didn't take any of the recommendations that were given to them.
They didn't give
the big pressing one, which was teacher pay.
Through
the rescue plan.
And it worked.
Through the rescue plan. It took the rescue plan money to actually deliver it. Yes, it did. It took the rescue plan money to actually state dollars provided by the rescue plan. So I have no faith. I have no faith.
The first time was through the state budget.
Yes.
Is the rubber going to meet the road when we see it? I mean, this is not a 1 year problem. We've known for a long time that there are simply not enough mental health services for everybody in this state.
And we have bed issues at state hospitals, obviously. Years and years ago, we closed down state hospitals and we took beds away. So now that's looking to be a concern. I'm also a little confused, and I did read through the complaint trying to understand kind of what level crimes these people are there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're pre-trial. So are they murderers, alleged murderers who are sitting there, in which case they would already be there waiting for a trial? Or, can they get out on bail while they're waiting for these trials? I was a little confused about how that plays
into it. It's just you're
it.
Ruled incompetent to stand trial. It doesn't say for what.
Right.
Yeah. To a certain extent, Mike just said the ACL, sort of questioned the ACL bringing this lawsuit. If there simply aren't beds available and they can't be, well, maybe they can be quickly made, but if there aren't beds available, if there aren't programs in place, what do we think a court can force the state to do here?
Well, the court can issue an order. And I guess unless you want to be out of compliance with that order, you will get cots. I don't know. You'll figure something out. You'll hire people on an emergency basis. And we can point to instances around the country where judges and their edicts have been ignored or slow walked at the very, we're doing that. And that's what's tough about this. Granted, everybody has sort of recognized, or many people have recognized, that this is a problem. But that doesn't necessarily mean that a group such as the American Civil Liberties Union is supposed to say, well, it's in progress. Because if you look at the data, just in Marion County, for instance, you had individuals who were, again, these are, as you pointed out, Nikki, not people who have been convicted, unlike the level six offenders. These are people who were deemed not to be competent to understand what they were being charged with or whether they could actually issue, legitimately a plea of guilty or not guilty. And they're waiting in many cases, on average, I think 4 months. And some were waiting longer than 200 days. So it's hard when you are in the civil liberties business to say, tell that person who is, the one who is arguably suffering in a manner that he or she isn't supposed to, that something's going to happen eventually. I mean,
it puts more pressure on the issue.
It does put pressures, and I guess to that extent, it will make sure that it's given every opportunity to be funded next session.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we post an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question gets to exactly sort of what we just talked about. Will the Indiana General Assembly make a major investment in public health in the next state budget? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, if the Supreme Court clears the way, will Indiana fully ban abortion with no exceptions for rape, incest, or the life of the pregnant person? 57% of you say yes, 43% say no. I think those numbers are not as close or closer than I think the chances are. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indiana Democratic and Libertarian candidates are working together to hold a series of town halls across the state. The events, organized by the State Democratic Party, invite Hoosiers to ask questions of the candidates ahead of this fall's elections. Democratic Secretary of State candidate Destiny Wells says the town halls are a response to what she calls the divisiveness in politics over the last few years.
We need to be responsible and show Hoosiers that politicians and candidates can work together and play together in the sandbox.
Libertarian U.S. Senate candidate James Siniak says the town halls are vital to hear directly from voters.
I believe that any office we hold is a public servant office, and if we're not hearing from the public, we're not doing our job.
And Libertarian Secretary of State candidate Jeff Moore says the town halls are about the fundamentals of the democratic process.
And so no matter what party, what brand, what philosophy, what ideology you have, we have to work together as Hoosiers and as neighbors to figure out what we want for our communities.
Indiana Republicans were invited to participate, but chose not to. Nikki Kelly, this elevates libertarians. Does it therefore diminish Democrats?
I don't think it diminishes them. I mean, good for the Libertarians for taking advantage and getting their message out there. I know Republicans sent a lovely letter back declining to participate because it's a political stunt. And I believe they also had some choice words for tweets that are not decent and respectful. So they obviously...
They were mine.
Some of them were. So, yeah, I don't think it hurts Democrats at all. No.
Does Republicans saying no make sense to you politically?
Oh, I understand it. I certainly understand it. Although I think what we say we want as a society and what Hoosier voters say they want, which is to engage with candidates, to hear people talk about facts and get beyond the bickering and the partisan name-calling and really talk about the issues. Now, whether they do or not, you know, if you have something like that, no one would probably show up because they'd be bored to death. But, I mean...
Not me, John.
No, there'd be five of us there. But, you know, what is culturally seen as advantageous when you're polling and saying, I want to hear that. That's what explains why people say that. But in any case, I don't think it hurts... It doesn't necessarily hurt Republicans. It's probably decent for Democrats because to the extent that you're getting, you look like you're doing what, you know, Norman Rockwell would suggest in terms of democracy. You're inviting everybody. Now, these other people didn't show, but we have these people. To the extent that gets more coverage, because it seems to me you're going to get, and you've seen this in the coverage if you look at the clips, you're getting more coverage because there is the notion of a debate or of some sort where you have more than one party just engaging in self-aggrandizement.
Well, two political parties working together on a single event.
Well, or more earned media. And then to the extent that you have people exposure, you might get some libertarians there who say, you know, I would never have listened to this Democratic candidate, but now I like what this person is saying. And maybe there's some issue where the libertarians might make some position that seems out of character with Indiana's thinking, mm-hmm. collective thinking. And then that makes the Democrat look like he's on solid ground. Did I bet I didn't even read your talking points when you put this whole plan together. But I mean, it seems it makes political sense, but very little downside.
I just find it really funny that they're, you know, complaining about a staffer's tweets when literally a president of the United States that was a part of their party sent mean tweets and degraded people for 5 years.
I think
and
we
they
agree
said
you're
nothing.
The Donald Trump of Indiana. Wow.
And you know what? At the end of the day, like, that gets people to listen to what Democrats are getting done because Republicans aren't doing jack anything.
Yeah, so you've
for
answered
them.
What everyone was asking for, which is combining the Democrat and Libertarian parties in Indiana, which is, you know.
I mean, okay.
Neither of them are a complete party, so maybe together they're a half a party or one or
let me ask,
party.
Let me ask this. If you're a Republican, why is this such an easy no?
Because it's completely Drew Anderson's political stunt.
It's not a political stunt. We're actually talking about the issues, and your folks are afraid to actually talk about why they're saying no to all these investments that's happening for the state.
I just it's the Joe Donnelly tour. It's the Eddie Melton tour. It's pulling the defecting. I'm the example. The latest example of this was the. Jennifer and Eddie Melton.
And you know what? I'm going to remember where
you
actually
praise
these tours.
I'm going to grab this Republican defector, and we're going to go on tour and hang him out here. You're taking advantage of Libertarians to put on a political stunt.
No, we're not.
You guys don't agree with on anything other than you're trying to beat Republicans, and you can't.
I just want to point out, it's supposed to be a listening tour. So, I mean, I thought the point of it was that citizens come and say what they want, not so much what the leaders are saying.
And you know what? The conversations have been all productive. And at the end of the day, you're hitting on our tours. You actually praised our tours when we started going on the road.
I thought you were doing a great job when you first started. This is just absurd. But if I'm wrong, then there will be a political consequence for it in the fall, and maybe you can come back on and we can
see how it
works.
Let's look forward to that.
Indiana Republican Congress.
A nonpartisan website, Legistorm, reports that Sparts had the highest turnover among staff in 2021. Politico followed up with allegations from unnamed sources, including apparently former staffers, who say Sparts frequently yells and curses at aides, belittling her staff's intelligence and berating them in front of others. An unnamed Republican source in the piece also says GOP leadership has tried to address her performance as an employer twice already. In the story, Sparts acknowledges in a statement that she works extremely hard at a pace that is not for everyone.
John Schwanis, Do the voters care about this?
Well, I'll go back to something I said a few moments ago in a different context when we were talking about Bureau of Motor Vehicles. We are the people who employ these individuals, the ultimate boss, and not just for the staff members, but for the member of Congress herself in this instance. And so you should care. You don't want to be contributing to a workplace that is hostile. Now, that's sort of the highfalutin reason. There's also a very practical reason. It seems to me that you want your congressional office to be fully functioning, well-oiled. We all know that members, particularly of the U.S. House, they thrive on constituent service. You know, some people never had a bill, you know, passed, maybe even a bill heard, but by George, they're going to be elected again and again because of constituent casework and people feel that they care. And it only stands to reason. Let's take it out of the context of a highly charged political atmosphere. If you make widgets and your customer service department in the widget factory has constant turnover and nobody knows, you know, what they're supposed to tell the people who call demanding answers to their broken widgets, you're going to have a problem. And so it doesn't matter necessarily that it does what the reason is. If your office is messed up, your office is not functioning, and you want a congressional office to function fully. That simple as that.
So he just made a compelling argument for why voters should care. Do they?
Oh, I think some of them do. I do want to note, by the way, she did an interview with Abdul-Hakim Shabazz this week where she did not deny this. She said that these young people need to toughen up. And my only point on that, and she said, you know, they sent me here to shake things up, and that's what I'm going to do. And that I don't have any problem with that. But I do think you can shake things up and still have common courtesy and respect for human beings.
Yeah, so it feels like this might have mattered more if the redrawn legislative district weren't quite so favored for Republicans the way it is now.
I think the populations, the lines are drawn around favorable. Yeah, I think which is the state's border.
So I mean, is something like this going to make a difference in November?
Yeah, I'll be honest, it's probably not. But at the end of the day, kind of what Shawana said here, when you have that much burn rate with staff, you have that much turnover, the person in office has folks that do not know the vision of what they want to accomplish for constituents, and honestly, at the end of the day, it really messes up the elected official. And you're kind of already seeing it. You know, we're having local press in her district saying that that she's MIA. She's nowhere to be found. And that is only going to it's only going to get worse if she keeps abusing staff.
Does Victoria Spartz need to start caring more about this? I mean, you know, as Nikki just pointed out, she's defending herself. She's, you know, not denying any of this and saying, no, that's just the way I run my shop. Is that going to be a problem for her long term in trying to accomplish things as an elected representative?
We've had other examples of people on this list when they were in Congress, and
Todd Urquita,
and now they're elected to attorney general. So, to the extent that the voters care, I think the answer is no. I think to the extent that what you're doing is taken seriously, it does. Urquita has not benefited from his posture and his handling of things. Now he is in an environment that benefits him. If you want to approach things like Donald Trump, you're going to be politically rewarded for that in Indiana in this environment. But it does impact how the seriousness of which people take ideas that, you know, he's been criticized for being outside his lane or being too political in his office, and he's been outside of his lane before in ways that he perceives benefit him politically. But in situations, we talked a couple weeks ago, I don't recall exactly the issue, but it was clearly in the charge of the Attorney General.
Oh, it was over investigating Black Lives Matter.
Oh, yeah, and he was completely dismissed as for that when it was clearly something that, whether you think it was politically motivated or not, it was clearly in the charge of his office. So I think at some point these reputations do have an impact on what you're actually trying to accomplish in public life.
All right, finally, Indiana recently had an auction for alcohol licenses. Such licenses in Indiana are limited by population. So after a new census, new licenses become available. And some of those licenses sold for high six-figure amounts, with one even going for nearly $2 million. Mike O'Brien, how much would you be willing to pay for an alcohol license?
I guess $2 million, because you're going to make more than $2 million.
I mean, I think it was Senator Ron Alting who was quoted in that piece going, I mean, this is a guy who knows what he's talking about in that area and said, I don't know how that's profitable.
We're going to find out. I mean, that's why the market sets the price.
But I do want to just point out, it's funny, but it's also why we have trouble changing alcohol laws in Indiana, because when lawmakers see that someone puts $1 million into a license, you know, then they don't want to say, oh, we want to let a bunch more people sell cold beer when someone over here just paid $1 million for a license.
Right. To that point, is this sort of story and those sorts of prices exactly why we won't see serious alcohol changes?
Probably, sure. Money, I mean, we always talk about morality being the issues with alcohol. No, it's the wrong M. It's all about money.
Yeah, it's money.
And market share. It doesn't really have much to do about morality.
All right. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Drew Anderson, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of States Newsroom, Indiana. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelist. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.